Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Friends with Money, Money Magazine's podcast to help you earn, save and achieve your financial goals. My name is Tom Watson, a senior journalist here at Money Magazine, and as always, it's great to be with you. Before we get into today's episode, don't forget to subscribe to Friends with Money if you haven't already. That way you'll get the show in your feeds every week and you won't miss an episode. On to today's show though. As regular listeners will know, we do love our chats about investing, whether that's shares, ETFs or gold. Our mission is to try and cover it all slowly, slowly. And for today's show, we are going to stay inside our investment portfolios, but we're going to focus in on an asset class that's been described to me by more than one person in recent weeks as a commonly neglected. We're talking about fixed income and bonds. And joining us today to dive into the topic is someone who knows all about the world of fixed income. It's CEO and co-founder of Australian fixed income micro-investing app, Blossom, Gabby Rosenberg. Gabby, thanks so much for joining us on Friends with Money.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome, Gabby. To start us off, for anyone who's unfamiliar with them, can you give us a short explainer of what bonds actually are and how they work?
I absolutely can. So bonds are a type of fixed income asset. Fixed income being an asset that pays a fixed rate of return. So bonds specifically are vehicles for companies or governments to raise money from investors. So when an organization issues a bond, it's essentially borrowing money from the bondholders for a specific period of time. And then in return, the company pays interest to bondholders and repays the original amount at the bond's maturity date. And the maturity date just means until the investment period is over. To use an example, which might make a little bit more sense, let's say that an organization issues a bond for $1,000, which they agree to pay back in full after 5 years. To make the bond more attractive, the organization will pay an interest rate of 5% every year. $50 each year, which is just 5% of my original $1,000 investment. And once the bond reaches maturity at the end of the investment period of 5 years, the investor will receive the full $1,000 plus all the interest earned over the five-year period. And that's why bonds can be considered a more predictable and stable investment.
Okay. So is it kind of like a loan in a way then?
Exactly. A debt security, a loan, a way for companies or governments to raise money for some of their business activities.
Okay. I think that's a really great kind of starting off point then, Gabby. I think a lot of people may have heard of government and corporate bonds before. So are those, I guess, exactly as they sound? And are there any other types of bonds or anything else which differentiates them?
There are many different types of bonds, as you mentioned very correctly, one being corporate bond, one being a government bond. It's the same sort of thing like we discussed before. So a corporate bond can be issued by a company. Let's take a bank as an example. And the bank wants to raise money for a business activity. So maybe they want to make an acquisition or perhaps they want to build a new office. And then similarly, a government, they might issue a bond to raise money to build a new highway or a hospital.
Okay, so pretty straightforward. I'm getting that sense that they're a little bit easier or to understand than some people might necessarily expect. But I guess following up from that, Gabby, what kind of factors influence the pricing of bonds as an investment?
So this is where it can get a little bit complicated, but bear with me.
Okay.
There are many factors. There's interest rates, there's credit ratings, there's maturity dates, inflation expectations. And on and on and on. So to dive into a few of those, the first one being interest rates. So when rates rise, bond prices tend to fall, which makes existing bonds less attractive compared to newly issued bonds because they have higher yields and then vice versa. The second one is credit rating. The credit worthiness of the bond issuer can also affect the bond's price because bonds issued by organizations with higher credit ratings are considered less risky And then they tend to have higher prices than those with lower credit ratings, which are fundamental principles that we take with other investments like property or shares. And then the final one we can dive into is the maturity date. And bonds with longer maturities are more sensitive to changes in interest rates than short-term bonds. So as a result, long-term bonds experience price fluctuations when interest rates change. And then, as I said, there's also inflation expectations and liquidity risk and economic conditions. And the bond market is a very complex place, and it can be very hard to navigate all these influences.
It seems like a lot potentially going on there. I think you've teed me up really nicely for my next question, though, Gabby, which is all about returns. Obviously, it's been a bit of a roller coaster a few years for shares. But are you able to give us, I guess, a bit of a sense as to how bonds have fared from a performance point of view, both over the last couple of years, for instance, and then over the long run?
So, as you mentioned, interest rates have gone up very fast. It's been a crazy time for stocks and property markets. And it was homogenous with the bond markets. In 2022, the bond market had its worst year yet. In 2023, this year so far, we have seen a lot of volatility, but it's certainly been better than last year. And investors have been drawn to the higher yields, the slowly but surely falling inflation. And then historically, bonds outperform when the world's expecting a recession. So it turned the tide a little bit for 2023, which is always good. And even when there is volatility, there's always opportunity in the bond market. So it can actually work in favor of those holding really strong, high quality assets. And the reason for that is because assets are priced more accurately in times of volatility. So there are opportunities to get higher yields, make the most of that, and then boost your performance in the medium term. But this always requires expert help to find opportunities like this. So if we take COVID as an example, as I said, 2022, the worst year in bond history, we were in the absolute thick of it, but the opportunity was in floating rate notes with investment grade credit qualities. They sustained a really strong performance throughout the entire pandemic. So having some of your money in bonds does make sense, but you need to seek advice. You need to do your own research before going ahead and buying any individual bonds on your own. And experienced fund managers, they always know how to handle the volatility. They can help you find the opportunity. So it can put you in good stead for a well-diversified portfolio.
Gabby, you've given us some excellent context already, and you've kind of answered this to a degree already as well. But just to really kind of drive the point home, I guess, what purpose do bonds or fixed income more generally have in someone's portfolio? You know, what kind of role can they play?
So there's a few different roles. One and a big one is reduced risk. So bonds and equities, they're influenced by different risk factors. So if we take bonds, we have interest rates, credit quality, inflation expectations, some of the influences we were talking about just before. And then if you use equities as a comparison, equities is more relating to markets, business, and financial risks. So you have an ability to balance these different risk factors, and that can help you reduce the overall risk of your portfolio. And then you also have a correlation. So how does one factor affect another? So bonds and equities can show positive correlation during crazy market times, like we saw in COVID, where they moved in lockstep. But over the long term, they often have negative correlation. So it's good to help you try and achieve that diversification. Bonds also, they pay a fixed rate. So it can provide you with passive, not guaranteed, but fixed income. Mm. And then during volatile times, bonds offer a flight to safety, as we like to call it, and a shift away from volatile markets into more conservative or stable assets. And that's why in the past 2.5 years, we've seen a 17% increase in high net worth individuals choosing to invest for fixed returns. And that was a really interesting ASX investor study where in the same time period, you had a 2% growth in retail investors and you had 17% increase in high net worth individuals. Mm. So, as usual, the high net worths are leaving some of the retail guys behind.
That's really interesting. Gabby, staying with the inside of a portfolio for a moment, does I guess the allocation of fixed income that someone, you know, might have in a portfolio also depend on, you know, their goals and their investing time frame?
Yes, there is a rule of thumb that says you should allocate the same percentage to fixed income as your age. So if you're 50, you allocate 50% to fixed income, which I think is a handy tool to keep in your pocket. But it always depends on someone's financial goals, their risk tolerance, their investment time frame. So if someone's primary goal is to save up for, let's say, a wedding, or they're saving for a home deposit in 1 to 2 years, then a larger allocation to fixed income might be sensible. But on the other hand, if you're investing for long-term growth and higher returns, maybe you're a young person and you're just investing for retirement, then a smaller allocation to fixed income with a larger focus on stocks or other high growth assets might be far more appropriate for you at that time.
Okay. Gabby, another fundamental question, and one that I'm sure there are plenty of people listening thinking, why hasn't he asked this yet? But how can investors actually buy bonds? You know, is it as simple as buying shares? Are there ETFs or other funds out there specializing in bonds? You know, if you could give us a bit of the, you know, the lay of the land, that would be brilliant.
There are a couple different ways you can start your fixed income investing journey or your bond journey. So one of those is through brokers. Brokers will always help you access the market where bonds aren't publicly traded. You can access them through ETFs, offer diversification instead of just being limited to one bond investment. There's other investment vehicles called listed investment trusts, LITs, and their investments listed on the ASX as an example and incorporated as a trust. So that's another good option. Then there's super, which is a very common one. If you have a balanced or a defensive super portfolio, chances are you have a large proportion of that allocated to fixed income, so cash or bonds or other fixed income assets. And then finally, which is a really good one, is managed funds. So like Blossom, which, as you said, I co-founded. And what managed funds can do for you is basically give investors an easy way to gain exposure to bonds. But the difference is that the investing is done completely for you by professionals. So in Blossom's case, we're targeting 5.25% per annum returns. And then you get your earnings posted and compounded daily. And with managed funds specifically, it's super important to look for managed funds that offer a well-diversified portfolio. So our fund, the Blossom Fund, it's diversified across more than 500 exposures, and we have 100% positive months since inception.
Gabby, we talked about a lot already today, but before we do let you go, is there anything else you think people should know about investing in bonds or fixed income that we haven't touched on already?
Yes, I think it's important to mention that the bond market is incredibly complex. It's difficult to understand. It's difficult to navigate, but there's always opportunity. And I leave my personal fixed income allocation to be managed by professionals where the investing is done for me. So if you want to invest in bonds, make sure you're careful, make sure you're seeking advice, you're doing your own research before buying anything on your own. And then that's always the best place to start.
I think that's an excellent point to end our chat on today. So Gabby, thank you so much for coming on. It has been a real pleasure.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Before we go, don't forget that you can get in contact with us with any queries or even episode ideas using our dedicated email, which is podcast@moneymag.com.au. And you can also keep up to date with all the latest financial news on our website by heading over to moneymag.com.au. That's it for this episode of the Friends with Money podcast, though, but we'll be right back in your feeds next week. I'm Tom Watson. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.